So what happens when a man is arrested for impersonating a police officer?
Nothing good.
How do the police handle it? And how do they keep someone from doing it? Well, we're lucky because we have the police officer in studio with us who has all the answers.
Yeah, he is the director of the Arizona DPS, Colonel Frank Milstead. Colonel Frank, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. And I would tell you that if you impersonate a police officer and you stop two state troopers, that would be what I refer to as a below average day.
Yeah, so this really did happen where a Mesa man has been arrested for impersonating a police officer after, and I saw his car. His car, it, would it be fair to say, is almost indistinguishable from an unmarked trooper's car?
No, I would agree. In fact, it's actually a little bit north of that because it did have the crash bar on the front from Satina, the same company that we use. It had the lights on, the blue and red. And this was the perfect storm, so to speak, and I'll tell you why it's the perfect storm. Because of the storm, two of our motorcycle officers get into one of the unmarked highway patrol cars. It was a yellow Mustang.
Okay.
And so they're riding two troopers to a car, only because of the inclement
weather.
Because
of the rain.
Right.
You don't make your motorcycle officers ride around the rain. That's nice of you.
We try to give them a little bit. They're in the car, and this guy goes to pull them over. So they don't stop, and then he pulls up next to them and start screaming out the window, so then they pull down.
They're like,
around.
Okay, let's see where this goes.
Exactly, and I think the biggest concern for this agency was, first off, we have a lot of unmarked cars out on the highway, and people want to know, well, how do I know the difference? So we should talk about that a little bit.
Agreed.
But even more importantly is, if you are a victim or you know somebody else that was stopped by this character, please call us and let us know. Call the Counterterrorism Center, give us your information, because we would like to know who you are and what happened.
Because as far as you know, this is the first time there was no other, you weren't looking for a guy impersonating a police officer. This came about because he pulled him over, but we have to assume he'd been doing this for a while. What are the odds of the very first time he impersonated a police officer, he pulled over two troopers?
Exactly. And he obviously had gone to a lot of trouble to create this lookalike car and put some money and expense into it. So it has happened, and we want to know who those people are.
So, you know, as a female, I get concerned about this because there's the urban myths, which do have some truth behind it, that there have been people in the past that impersonate an officer or deputy, and then they pull a female over, and then, you know, bad things happen. And so when I hear stories like this, it's always very concerning to me. And then, from what we've been told, the person driving the car impersonating the officer was a uniformed armed security guard. And so he looked
the official part. In some way, shape, or form.
Well, and what's official to who? You know? I mean, it may not look official to me, but it might look official to
an average citizen.
That's
absolutely.
Right.
So Colonel Frank, how can I tell? I'm pulled over. There's lights. It's an unmarked car. There's flashy lights. I pull over to the right side of the road. I'm approached at my window. How am I, respectfully as well, supposed to determine, is this a real police officer or is this a scam?
Exactly. So the first thing I would tell you is, if it's a state trooper, almost every time they will be in uniform and have identifying paraphernalia on them, the badge and the uniform, the patch. You can always ask for someone to identify themselves. If you ask an officer who stops you in plain clothes to give you identification, they're required to do so. So I would say that would be a clue if they don't. And then the next thing is, like you were talking about, Monica, if you're uncomfortable with the stop, you just need to let that officer, no matter if it's a trooper or a deputy or whoever, know that you see they're there, slow down, put on your turn signal, and maybe you want to drive off the freeway to a Circle K or
a lit area.
Someplace where there's other people around. And that's completely permissible. And then the other thing we tell people is, you can always call 911 and describe your car, where you are, describe the car that's behind you. And the dispatcher, they're great at this, and they will walk you through this, tell you where to go and where to pull off. But I think the big key is to slow down, don't continue to drive at highway speeds, and do something to indicate to the person behind you that you understand they're there. But
you acknowledge that there's an officer behind you.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because, again, I can see a lot of people. But can we just acknowledge this guy really picked the wrong car to pull over with two of your troopers inside? I'm only guessing, and Colonel Frank, I don't know this. So these guys come back. You know, I think there's a station house, like, where all the troopers stand around and tell stories. these guys were the stars of the day. They sat up there and they told this story over and over again. Then new people come and go, come on, tell them the story again. Come on, start over again.
Well, I'm sure there was a little levity after this had occurred. But I would tell you from the leadership point of it, for us, our biggest concern was who else has he done this to?
Sure.
And what has he done?
Fair enough. So there was another story, and it doesn't involve your troopers directly, but this has certainly been making the rounds out there. And I think it has a lot of people, I would argue, rightfully concerned. State Representative Paul Mosley, a Republican from Lake Havasu City, got pulled over by a La Paz County sheriff for doing 97 in a 55. There is video, a body cam video that has come out of this state representative not only not denying. Normally when people are speeding, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and you've been involved in this. So you pull me over. Do you know how fast you're going? I subtract 10, no matter what I was doing. You subtract 10. This guy not only didn't have a problem that he was doing 97, he bragged that he was doing 120 earlier and had gone as fast as 140. He went the other direction with it. And he claims some sort of immunity because of he's a state lawmaker.
Yes.
This is all kinds of ridiculous, isn't it?
And I saw the same video, and I was appalled by it as well. And I'm sure that Monica could provide a legal opinion of how that particular statute applies to a civil traffic offense or even a criminal traffic offense. But obviously, that is not the representative of our normal representatives of what they normally stand for and what they do. You know, people from all walks of life get stopped in traffic. Everyone speeds at some time in their life and gets stopped. And people who get upset about being stopped for speeding, I always ask them to remember, at least you didn't get stopped every time you were speeding.
There, yeah. I call it the cost of doing business, but I acknowledge it to a certain extent. I never get angry about it. Can I ask, this is serious? Listen, you're doing 120 mile an hour in a 55, if we believe his braggadocious, you know, the accident, the potential for accident is catastrophic. You don't walk away from a 120 mile an hour crash, let's be honest. And it's, you want to kill yourself doing that, that's great. It's the other people that you drag along with you. This was a creative excuse for speeding. Maybe he believes he has a legal thing to it. People have to give you some stupid creative excuses for speeding, correct?
Oh, no. You hear them all. And it's in this case, I think the thing was, it kind of incensed me was that I really just don't care. And I'm also fully aware that the legislative session has passed. They went through sine die a month and a half ago. I mean, there is nobody reporting to the Capitol for session unless they go there for paperwork or on their own accord.
And he was going home.
Correct.
He even said he wasn't going to the Capitol, like, I have to hurry because I have work to do. He actually told the sheriff deputy that he wanted to surprise his wife.
Yeah. And the legislative immunity is, you know, the words that he used. And really just kind of think of it common sense.
Okay.
Do you really think that if someone is a crime, right? If they're committing a crime, are we really going to let them off just because they're a state legislator? I mean, of course not. So the legislative immunity has to do with, if you say something on the floor of the legislature, you're not going to get sued for
it. Right. That's what it
comes from. Or if you're, you know, hurrying down the highway so that you can get to this emergency vote or something, okay, maybe they won't give you a ticket for that. But if it's not in session and it has nothing to do with your functions as a legislature,
Representative Mosley appears to think he's the ambassador from Spain or something and is immune to American law. So Monica Lindstrom in for Pamela Hughes today. Colonel Frank Milstead joining us in studio. We're going to be right back on the other side. We want to talk about the Arizona Border Strike Force, something that's going on right here. Colonel Milstead working with Governor Ducey on it.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So our southern border, needless to say, a hot button issue around here. Everyone knows. Kind of, I think that there is some general givens regarding the border between Arizona and Mexico. When I grew up in southern Arizona, so I grew up in Tucson. I used to spend some time down there. I'm familiar
with
Santa Rita High School. Thank you. But I also would go down. We would camp and hike, and I've been along some of the border towns. You know, spent time in Douglas and Sasebo and all these different places. But our southern border is a a corridor, for lack of better terms, mm-hmm. for human and drug smuggling. That is a fact. It has to do with the fact that it is so loosely populated. It's kind of easy to sneak across. And there is the Arizona Border Strike Force. And joining us in studio right now is DPS, the director of the Arizona DPS, Colonel Frank Milstead. And this is something that you've been working on. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that Border Strike Force?
Yeah, so the governor, when he was elected, Governor Ducey was unhappy with some of the cooperation that state was getting, how much the federal government was doing to make a difference on the southwest border. And you have to realize that the cartels have been smuggling, you know, drugs into Arizona for 100 years. They have a very keen business acumen. In fact, you can look at what's happening today with marijuana versus hard narcotics. Marijuana coming across the border is almost non-existent right now. And that's because they can grow it legally in states inside the United States.
There's not a profit margin as much as there used to be.
Well, and then the cartels can actually grow it here legally.
Yeah.
So they come here and grow it. So they
change their business model.
They change the business model, just like they did back in the 70s with what was happening in Colombia. They picked up that work because the U.S. government was spending so much time in Colombia wiping out the coca fields and trying to impact cocaine. So the border is very porous. When you talk about border security and you talk about a way to slow down the amount of narcotics coming into Arizona, that's what this was designed to do. We started on a very small level, and we continue to grow. And this year, the legislature gave us another $2.9 million to hire an additional 12 troopers to partner with our federal partners and work on interdiction.
You're working with Border Patrol down there along the border on this?
We do. We work by ourselves. We work collaboratively with them. We work with other sheriff's office. Cochise County has a task force down there under Sheriff Daniels that is incredibly successful. Sheriff Napier in Pima County, which is Tucson, has a very successful program. So we continue to work very closely with them. We actually have about 34 canines out there now, and the dogs do a great work for us, identifying people who are smuggling drugs in automobiles.
I have a question for you, and I don't know. This is a genuine one. I'm not sure of the answer. Again, talking to the director of Arizona DPS, Colonel Frank Milstead, this Arizona Border Strike Force trying to interdict down there. The Tohono O'odham Indian Reservation shares a border. As a matter of fact, the reservation crosses into Mexico and is in Arizona. And that border specifically, I've been on the res and been down there. And in some cases, the border is nothing more than a three-strand barbed wire fence. How difficult is it to police areas like that and dealing with a sovereign nation or the tribal government?
And you're exactly right. So that reservation straddles an international border. So there's literally tribal members that live in that sovereign nation that live both in the country of Mexico and in the United States of America.
And travel back and forth.
And back and forth. We have a great relationship with the director of public safety down there. And where there is actually a high-intensity drug trafficking area down there, we continue to work. The tribal president has been cooperative with Arizona DPS. But there still is a challenge of what you can and can't do. And the bottom line is the troopers or federal agents that are on that reservation or on that sovereign nation, they can do just about anything they need to do as long as it does not involve a tribal member. You can't take a tribal member off the nation, but I could take you off the nation because you don't have
a
residency.
Member of the tribe, right.
Absolutely. So you can execute state search warrants on the reservation, but you can't again take off tribal members. So we surveil and wait for them to leave and do those things.
Fair enough.
Colonel Milstead, we're talking about the Arizona Border Strike Force, and this is a cooperative effort with many agencies. We hear right now a lot about immigration and illegals coming across the border. I don't think that's what this strike force is about, is it? And what are the actual goals that it has?
No, it's not about immigration. This is really about criminal activity, and that's what they're focused on. Now, I will tell you that we do find people in the desert, and actually we rescue a lot of people in the desert, provide medical attention, get them to Border Patrol. And a lot of the people that are trying to get into the country illegally are doing it through backpacking in drugs and other items into the country. So those people are dealt with and turned over to Border Patrol. But this
I hadn't thought of it like that. I mean, this is what just popped into my head. You are attempting to come into the United States. You can't maybe afford to pay one of these human traffickers. But if you agree to bring drugs in, it becomes like your
payment.
Your work release program. You you smuggle this in for us, and then you can just keep walking.
Yeah, it's your sweat equity program.
Wow.
So
okay.
Absolutely, it works that way. And then some are just mules that go back and forth and continually,
sure.
You know, backpack in drugs. But you're right, Monica. It's about criminal activity, and it's interesting. You know, when the governor talks or anyone talks about border security, the way I look at it is very simple. This isn't about racism, elitism. It's not about separatism. It's really just about making undocumented people use the 6 international ports of entry to come into this country so they become documented. And it's really to curtail the efforts of the cartels to poison Americans.
So we talked a little bit about maybe the change. And what's the biggest thing you've noticed? What's the biggest change along the southern border? Or maybe I say for our audience who doesn't spend a lot of time down there, what don't they know about the border between Arizona and Mexico?
I think what they don't know is that there are so many people that die in that desert that are trying to get into this country. I think Sheriff Napier said the other day that he recovers about 200 bodies in the desert every year.
Really?
Wow. And then when you talk about
that's only the ones they find. I mean, you can imagine there's some that don't.
Absolutely. It's incredible numbers. And then even when they talk about these kids and other people, some of them are just left out in the desert. Chief Karish talked about a kid that was left, a 5-year-old that was left with a lunch pail and a Coke in the middle of the desert, and if we had not found him, he would have perished.
Absolutely.
It's very, very brutal. The environment down there is very, very harsh. I will tell you that I have a newfound appreciation for what Border Patrol does. That environment down there is so hostile. The arroyos that they hike through, the surprises that they find.
I'm
surprised that more of them aren't hurt.
Wow. Colonel Milstead, thank you for your time today.
Always a pleasure to come in and talk with you.